As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
I'm sorry, you can sit there and look and play with all your silly machines as much as you like.
Is Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
Tame again.
Crank up the music. Charge your glass. This nation is going to dance all night.
The language of Premier League fixtures day. Where does biting really sit in the hierarchy of things done to a fellow professional? Has Patrick Schick breathed new life into the genre of halfway line goals? What actually is the simplest of tasks? And the Gary Neville budget punditry package. Brought to your ears by The Athletic, this it's football cliches. Right now, you can subscribe to The Athletic for a special price of £1 a month for 6 months. You'll enjoy great analysis and in-depth features from the very best football writers around, as well as ad-free versions of all of our podcasts. So go to theathletic.com/clichespod to take advantage of this special discount. That's theathletic.com/clichespod. Hello everyone, welcome to episode 75 of the Football Clichés podcast. I'm Adam Hurry, and with me, first of all, Charlie Eccleshare. Now, we've seen everyone play once, Charlie. So, from the perspective of a purely football feast, it's all downhill from here, isn't it? I mean, that the first round of matches is essentially where it's all at, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, although often you get the first one, they're still kind of feeling their way in a bit. And then by the third group game, you've got some teams already through, some teams are out, so we've got dead rubbers.
Simultaneous kickoffs,
exactly.
Good.
I think the sweet spot, and then obviously once you're in the knockouts, it can be pretty turgid defensive. So the sweet spot often is the second group game. So we may still have the best to come.
Okay. Yeah, it just felt like the facade of Euro 2020 falling away as the first 2 p.m. kickoff disappeared. And then I thought, this is it. The theoretical enjoyment of this tournament is over, and the real stuff, annoyingly, has to begin. Alongside you, Nick Miller, how's your circular wall chart working out, mate?
Oh, it's well. I mean, I haven't.
You must have done a lap by now.
Well, I haven't. On principle, I haven't been filling it in. Good night.
Okay.
No. It's a disgusting rejection of the form, and I won't have it. But yeah, I can only imagine it would be an absolute nightmare.
You just got it lying around, constantly annoying you.
Yeah, I think it's in a bag somewhere. Anyway.
Good. Well, before we get into Euro 2020 matters, rather overshadowed by this irregularly scheduled tournament, are the announcement of the Premier League fixtures, Charlie. A huge day in the football calendar, a relentlessly consistent day of football content. There's no new way to approach the release of the Premier League fixtures. I've never talked about it on a podcast before. I actually don't know how much I'm allowed to talk about the Premier League fixtures until the dark forces of Football Data Co. come knocking on my door and with their lawyers. I literally don't know how much I'm allowed to say out loud. Why are they so precious? Football Data Co. own the fixtures. And apparently, if you publish them without their permission, they get really annoyed. But to me, that's just a list of games and teams. How can that possibly be someone's property? Apparently, yeah, they sue your ass off if
really?
You if you list them in too much detail. Nick's nodding.
Yeah, it is a very strange concept. I've just finished editing a book and I had to check that I was allowed to publish league tables, these kind of, you know, publicly available pieces of information, and it was fine. But because after having been spooked by this idea of you know, having to check with the great keepers of the calendar that you're allowed to publish fixture lists, I had to check whether you was allowed to publish the league tables as well.
That's so weird.
Well, I mean, yeah, it is really odd. I mean, I guess a lot of work goes into it. Maybe that's what they're so precious about. But I wonder, Charlie, if their stranglehold over the way we express football fixtures should perhaps extend to some of the other traditions. I mean, whenever you read an article about the Premier League fixtures being announced, the order in which they tell you the kind of highlights of the fixtures is absolutely set in stone. What must you know first? What is the first thing you must find out?
Who the champions are playing, who they'll begin their title defence against.
Yeah. Open their title defence against.
And,
absolutely.
And who the promoted teams are
playing. Yes, exactly. Always, yeah.
That's huge. With preference going to the team who were in the Premier League for the first time.
Yeah,
they'll begin their Premier League journey with a...
begin life
in the Premier
begin
League.
Begin life in the Premier League. Is it life back in the Championship that's the main life?
That's also a big one, yeah. But there's also... I know from having written, and I'm sure you've had this as well, both of you, like, when you have to write a summary, you suddenly become very aware of all the synonyms for trip, host, visit.
Oh, my God.
Because you're rifling through them very quickly, because you can't keep... They play them at home, they play them at home. It's really good for that.
Well, let's talk about it, shall we? I mean, I'm amazed that Football Data Co. haven't taken intellectual financial ownership of this as well. Nick, I mean... To start on the kind of top level, you cannot say the word play anymore. You must use the generic terms face or take on.
Come up against is one as well.
Come up against.
Travel to.
So they're your kind of... Yeah, well, that they're your venue specific. Then you get to kind of venue specific level of proceedings. Home games, your host. Play host to. Which is a phrase that we use constantly, which is just, again, ridiculous. Play host to.
Come in. Set yourself down. Mi casa es su casa.
Entertain. Yeah. Welcome.
What's the other face off against, the sort of the extension of just face?
Oh, I don't think I like face off.
Oh, it's totally
against.
Ludicrous. But I think if you're at the sort of 12th kind of elegant variation of play.
Nick, talk me through the away game synonyms then.
Yeah, so we've got travel to, face a trip to. face a trip is either, I think, either a long journey or a tough, or Liverpool away or something.
Yeah, or Plymouth in the FA Cup.
What else have we got?
Visit. Make the short journey to is also they'll begin their title defence for the short journey to. Insert teammate.
Yeah, very, very good indeed. Clash should be used sparingly. Showdown even more so. But yeah, I'm not convinced by face-off, Charlie.
No.
I'm not going to welcome that into the UK fixture lexicon just yet.
I don't think showdown is really an opening, like the fixtures are announced. Showdown is reserved for further on in the season, surely.
Yeah, more business endy, isn't it? Yeah,
teams will also face an early test of their title credentials, you know, with that kind of... That could even be a trip to the defending champions, or maybe it's more a kind of, I don't know, a slightly more awkward-looking fixture, that the sort of games you need to win if you want to challenge for the title.
Picking out presumptive potential title deciders as well. But huge day for elegant variation. But a shame it's been buried in the midst of a fairly entertaining tournament. Speaking of which, Nick, France versus Germany, a thoroughly good football game on Tuesday night, but it was overshadowed by one of the more increasingly tedious mini phenomena of modern football, which is the bite, which is kind of like the moral panic. And no one's really ever sure where they stand on biting. I mean, it's clearly abhorrent. It's abhorrent behaviour, but we're never really sure, you know, how to...
Yeah, it feels like it ranks just below spitting in the worst things you can do on a football pitch, isn't it?
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Yeah. Charlie, where does it sit in the hierarchy of acceptable things to do to a fellow professional?
Oh, yeah, it's definitely... Biting. Well, also, I mean, isn't... For a lot of people, wouldn't diving and that sort of thing be worse? Because that's sort of cheating your fellow professional. That's worse almost than kind of... physical harm in some people's eyes. Yeah, definitely not.
But you wouldn't rather have a broken leg than someone bite you. I mean, it's up. It's 50-50, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? But it's definitely not as bad as spitting. But you're right, there is a confusion, because you know, we like to sort of condemn things as being cowardly and that sort of thing, which I suppose biting is, but there is a weirdness to it that does leave people a bit flummoxed. And that was definitely the case, wasn't it, in ITV's halftime analysis of the incident. I think Ian Wright said he was like just a bit sort of confused by the whole thing.
Yeah, I think, Nick, I think part of this moral panic is this, no one can really understand why a human being would do that. Is, I think that's part of it, isn't it? It's just the inexplicable nature of it.
Yeah, it just feels like the sort of thing a truculent child would do at a nursery and then get thrown out for it. There was also a sort of part of this is the kind of interminable discussion of did he bite him? Did he
did
everything slowed
contact?
Down. And even last night, I can't remember who said it, but they slowed the footage down so much that someone said, well, Popper didn't react to it, but it was only because the slow motion replay was so slow that the Pogba reacted.
Oh yeah, if you look at it in slow motion, it's always going to look worse, isn't
it? It's the kind of ultimate extension of this, you know, slow motion replays and in 4K or whatever are killing the game, because there was a lag between what appeared to be the bite and Pogba reacting, which in real time would have been instant.
Yeah, you got to freeze the frame on the moment that he makes contact with the bitee. But I mean, Charlie, I mean, I guess it's about time in the evolution of this phenomenon that we perhaps examine technique here, because Rudiger picked a suboptimal part of the body to try and bite, and then when you factor in the lack of friction on a polyester shirt, you're not going to get any purchase there. So it's probably lucky for him that he chose the back of the shoulder blade, because you're never going to get
maybe
purchase
that was
there.
Part of it. He didn't want to get too much purchase. He thought that might count against him. But yeah, I mean, it is something that will run and hope. But hopefully this won't become a kind of, you know, Euro 2020 will be the biting tournament.
I always want something that will run and that may well be it. But Nick, on more constructive matters, we may well have seen the goal of the tournament. We may later discuss whether it's the best European Championship goal ever. I have a few grumbles about this. But first of all, Patrick Schick's goal at Hampden Park against Scotland. Has this breathed new life into the halfway line goal genre, which to me was flagging a while ago?
Yeah, it's the fade on it that's and the curl. That's the it looked like a golf drive almost more than a football shot. And
it did a little tracking.
And I don't know. It seemed like one of the things I liked about it is that we got the standard post-match. I'd seen him off his line earlier on in the game.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, he was coming out a bit too far. So I thought if I had the chance, I'd give it a go kind of thing, which was always very enjoyable. But yeah, it's a slightly, I don't think I've ever seen, we've all seen, you know, players spotting keeper off the line, pinging one in from the centre circle or whatever. But I don't think I've ever seen one that sort of curls around and then over the goalkeeper.
Speaking of the goalkeeper, Charlie, the backpedalling goalkeeper, to me, maybe it's my twisted enjoyment of football, but that's my favourite part of it. We've spoken about this on the podcast before, about that moment a goalkeeper realises where he is and how much trouble he's in. And I think many bits of analysis of this goal have spotted the fact that Schick looked up and they made eye contact, which is so good. You're fucked. You're fucked.
Yeah, it's amazing that does that. I mean, the only thing with that is it does give it, I mean, it's brilliant to watch, but it gives it a slightly cartoony quality, which I think what makes this a really special halfway line goal, and like you say, it does breathe new life into the genre, is often they can seem so freakish and weird and a bit like a keeper's gone up at the end of the game and then it's just like, it's a bit of a novelty. What's special about this, and it reminded me a bit of the Xabi Alonso one, not against Luton, but against Newcastle, was that it was kind of, it was more just in normal play to be doing that and to spot it. And also, I'm sure this won't happen, but there was even talk of it like heralding a new era of these sort of goals, because modern day keepers, they have to be so far off their line. You know, we want them to sweep keep. So it's almost you know, I think this will almost become the norm. I'm sure it won't. I'm sure it will end up being a freaky goal, but it's as if it wasn't, that it's, the sign of things to come, that he's kind of hacked football in a way.
No, we're definitely onto something here, Nick, because there was obviously an element of calculation about this goal. And whilst I refute the fact that it was a lob. It was not a lob. The ball wasn't bouncing. Although I will caveat that goalkeepers can be lobbed, and that could be any technique. That's an odd crease in the footballing language. But I'm tempted to give this an exemption for the word finish, because whilst a finish really should be the end of a move and it should be a fairly scorable chance on, you know, in XG terms, I feel like this ticks all the other boxes. He saw where the goalkeeper was, he bent it round him, and it went in the goal. It's a finish. I quite like the idea. I'm tempted to give it a one-off exemption.
Ooh.
Now, I would totally agree. But that kind of goes for sort of 25-yard drives and things like that. But in this case, the principles are all the same. It's just the distance. And that feels like an arbitrary thing to care about in this particular instance.
Yeah, I think if we start complaining about arbitrary things to care about, then we're in some serious trouble. But
welcome to the last episode of
Footy. A finish is either inside the box, or if it's a one-on-one, then... And you know, maybe you could cluster this as a one-on-one, because there weren't many defenders between Schick and the keeper. But
I think this shows how sort of spectacular a goal it is in some ways, that we're even having a debate that he makes it look like a finish, that it isn't, that he's made it look not just a sort of weird long range kind of hoik. It is in many ways. There's something so deliberate about it. I think that's what makes it quite special.
Yeah.
Also, can I just ask, on finish, I've often wondered, do you think a good finish, it has to go in to be classed as a finish? Or can you say it's actually a decent finish, but the keeper saved it?
Oh, it's so complicated. I've tried to explain this a lot recently. I think I put this in the manifesto for the football language recently. But largely, yes. A finish has to go in because it's finishing the move. And although, you know, if shot goes wide, that isn't technically a finish, but you can talk about it in the absence of. So, you know, the finish nearly came off,
right,
or it wasn't the finish he was looking for. So it's always in the absence of, but essentially a miss cannot be a finish.
Even if the keeper saves it. You mean it has to be
a
goal?
Yeah, I'd say so. It's the same principle. So a finish is either a goal, or you're talking about the intent. That's it. Yeah, fundamentally. I think that's quite crucial.
It has to be a hell of a save, though. I think, just as a side issue to the finish thing, on the very rare occasions I find myself, unfortunately, in the presence of rugby, when they talk about finishers for a try, what's that? The guy, it's just a bloke running over a line. That's not a finish.
I don't mind it. It kind of jars, but it's more or less the same principle. It's taking the ball into the place where it needs to be. So I don't mind it so much. I don't begrudge them that. It's fine. I begrudge them so much else, so it's fine. But other little elements of the Patrick Schick goal, which I really enjoyed. Here's Charlie Adam on BBC Radio 5 Live, Charlie, saying the most inevitable thing we could possibly have heard about this goal.
Top class finish and then a world class goal. If that's Ronaldo, Messi, Lewandowski, anybody else in the world, we'll be talking about that for weeks to come.
Right, as we always should, let's break this down. Messi and Ronaldo always going to appear in this, always, until they retire. Lewandowski seems to be a kind of new entry. If anything, that's heralded his entry into the highest echelon of football talent when you get included in If It Had Been.
Oh, absolutely. And then, to finish then with... or anyone else in the world.
Yes! It doesn't work!
It's kind of
directly
contradicting that. I mean, I was thinking about that, because clearly that it's misused here, because it's such a spectacular goal. He's right when he says anyone else in the world. This is a goal that could have been scored by anyone, and we'd be talking about it endlessly. I mean, it's not as if Schick is someone that we all knew loads about coming into the tournament. So I was thinking then, is there a goal where this would be, where that Ronaldo or Messi had scored, it would be legitimate? I can't think of a
goal where if either of those two had scored it and no one else had done it, we would have talked about it for longer.
Is it a really nice finish that is just for them, you know, it looks very classy the way they've hit it, and if it was someone else, we might be like, nah, maybe he's fluked it.
I think I can nail down this kind of presumed situation. Nick, a good example would have been during France versus Germany, when Kylian Mbappe had that goal disallowed, or he curled it into the corner. Now, in the grand scheme of goal scoring, it wasn't a great goal. It was a goal to grace a game like that, etc. But it wasn't a fantastic goal. It was a very nice finish. And there were lots of tweets about, oh, you know, if I could relax the offside law for one goal, it would be this one. And I feel like that might be the benchmark, because if Patrick Schick had scored that, we wouldn't have been talking about it. We wouldn't have been saying, oh, I wish the offside law had been relaxed for this. So maybe that is the reverse phenomenon. Maybe we have nailed it.
Yeah, I think that's it, because that sort of very measured finish, you can either just see it as a one-off nice goal, or you can see it as further confirmation of someone's burgeoning genius, as it would have been for Mbappe.
But they followed it up later on, Charlie, with it was a reasonably simple ball across for Benzema to finish. And he got the same treatment after it got disallowed for offside. This is nonsense. What's wrong with people? Romanticism took hold far too much there. Everyone lost their minds. It was just offside. It's fine.
but that is Mbappe, that is kind of what I'm talking about. I think that is a really good example, because Italy's third goal against Turkey was really nicely worked. And then it's a brilliant finish into the bottom corner that we did sort of characterise as, it's a sort of game-settling goal against Turkey, no big deal. Yeah. If that had been Mbappe, Griezmann and Benzema combining, we probably would be talking about this, well, evidence of the Holy Trinity and look how good France are. So maybe there is something in this after all.
I think not a goal from the halfway line. No, definitely not. But part of me wants to give Charlie Adam credit for maybe kind of exploding this news by saying just at the end it would go
or
to
anyone.
Anybody else. I like to think he's in on it. He's definitely in on it. Anyway, elsewhere, Nick, really enjoyed this. I mean, this happens quite a lot on live score apps, but there was a running commentary for Patrick Schick's goal. And it explained it thus. David Marshall is stranded way out of his goal after his team loses possession, and Patrick Schick, open brackets, Czech Republic, close brackets, has the simplest of tasks to shoot the ball into an empty net from distance. I mean, it's not automated. I don't think anyone worked out the distance, went, no, that's all right. It's not a tap-in. Definitely not the simplest of tasks. I mean, what is the simplest of tasks? What's the threshold?
The simplest of tasks can also be described as it would have been harder to miss.
The 6-yard box, would you say?
Well, but the simplest of tasks is also kind of proportional to the player as well. So, you know, this.
Oh, really?
Yeah, no, I think so.
Really?
Yeah, because if the simplest of tasks for, you know, Sergio Aguero is not the simplest of tasks for, you know, Lyndon Dykes, bless him. But.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
So, you know, he also in the kind of he was never going to miss from there kind of thing as well. But no, Patrick Schick, that was not the simplest of tasks.
I think simplest of tasks, though, does often go hand in hand with a goalkeeping error, because it's someone was left with the simplest of tasks. So that will happen after a goalkeeper, say, like, come to clear it and completely missed his kick, leaving so-and-so with the simplest of tasks.
Or a superb assist. The winger or the midfielder has done all the work.
Oddly enough, explaining the simplest of tasks was actually a moderately difficult task. Nick, I sometimes wonder in these situations that the quality of a goal scored at a major tournament is directly proportional to the number of different languages we get to hear the commentary in. I had to say in the research for this episode, it was the underwhelming number of languages I could find the commentary in, but I can offer you the perennial favourite of Arabic. Now, Nick, whilst factoring in the natural hyperbole of Arabic language commentators, I've started to think I've never seen a bad goal with Arabic commentary over the top of it. I'd really like to see them commentate over the simplest of tasks.
Well, the thing about them is that even when I think it was Jack Hendry, the Scottish player that took the shot, the guy was already at 11 for that. So presumably, if he was commentating on the simplest of tasks, then it would still be kind of, you know, sort of Martin Tyler commentating on that G goal kind of thing.
Maybe we should get them into the intro of the podcast. But Charlie, I'm starting to wonder if the Arabic commentary world is starting to suffer from what I would diplomatically describe as the Drury effect. So they think they probably will be clipped up for social media at some point. So if Jack Hendry is shooting from 30 yards, well, better give it some just in case it flies into the top corner, because
you'd be raging, wouldn't you, if that had gone in, and they were like, oh, they're using other novelty commentary for the social media clips. Another sign of a sort of big moment like that is so-and-so moment is better with Celine Dion, My Heart Will Go On, played over it. and I do wonder if that's been done for Patrick Schick.
It's probably got the airborne duration for it. But it's not 2017. We shouldn't be doing that. So at all. What I did quite like. I'm not familiar with this guy's work, Nick. But ESPN's Stephen A. Smith included it in his "Ain't No Way" segment, which I will play for you in all its glory.
This is a special one-play edition of Ain't No Way. You got to check this out right here. This is Czech Republic taking on Scotland at Euro 2020. Patrick Schick launches a shot from just inside half field, and the ball flies over David Marshall for the goal. Let's show that play again, please. Show it right there. I mean, kicking it from halfway down the field. Take another look. Marshall's way out of his goal, and Schick takes advantage for a second goal of the game. Czech Republic go on to win 2-0. Ain't no way a shot like that should happen, especially in Euro 2020. But it did. Maybe that's why Euro 2020 is just so special right now. It's on ESPN, by the way. We like that.
Nick, I mean, at this stage, it would be remarkably easy for us to patronise our stateside friends for even talking about Euro 2020. But I enjoyed all of that, especially the point where he name-checked David Marshall. That really gave it. That really gave it some. Like, he really cares about this goal. And if he's talking about the hapless goalkeeper who he'll never ever talk about ever again.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of vaguely aware of Stephen A. Smith's work, usually through people on my Twitter feed who follow American sports more closely than I do. And I'm never sure whether their kind of dismissive tone, because they often is quite a dismissive tone, is either because he's just a bit of a clown, or he's deeply problematic, which is a real kind of it's a sort of
oh, okay.
it's an absolute tightrope on social media these days. But yeah, it's I mean, I think my favorite bit of that whole clip was the pronunciation of Scotland.
Yeah,
Scotland,
which was just really spat it out.
I love that. I'm also really curious to know whether there was any meaning behind him saying, "Ain't no way that should happen, especially at Euro 2020." Is there a theory? And then he said, and then what does he say? He's like, "And that's why Euro 2020 is so crazy," or something. It's like, what is it about you? What's his view on Euro 2020 that's informed that?
I don't know. Maybe he isn't familiar with the pantheon of European Championship goals that have been scored in the past, because, Charlie, it sparks the inevitable debate about whether it's the greatest goal ever scored at European Championships, which is fine. That's the natural news cycle. That's how things work. That's how football content works. And take the BBC website, for example. They trawled through your usual candidates: Marco van Basten in 1988, Davor Šuker, Paul Gascoigne in 1996, Jerdan Shaqiri and Hal Robson-Kanu at 2016. But among the nominees was Antonin Panenka's penalty in 1972, which on a technical level, I disagree with. Ain't no way that's one of the selections for the best ever European Championship goal, because, and I'm into slightly dubious territory now, is a penalty scored in a shootout a goal?
Yeah, in any meaningful sense, no. I can see why they did it, but yeah, it is, you're then getting into very strange ground. Although saying that, are there any other penalties that could ever be included? Are there any penalties that are just so memorably good?
Kevin Pressman.
Kevin Pressman. Great.
Yes.
Shout.
Fucking hell, yeah. Of course. But, you know, even on a non-ironic level, I don't think I could include any penalty in such a conversation. But I think it's absolutely...
Pirlo Euro 2012 on Joe Hart was very amusing. Yeah. But no, I mean, it absolutely shouldn't be.
But now, Nick, I'm worried. I mean, I might even have to consult the laws of the game, which I think will back me up. I don't think the word goal has ever been used to describe a penalty scored in a shoot. I don't think anyone would ever use that word. So on that basis alone, we should discount it.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX, stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Nick, I'm enjoying the coverage on TV of Euro 2020, but at some point during any tournament, you start to fear for our friends over at Sky Sports and Sky Sports News about being left out of the party. But not necessarily, because Sky Sports are doing a lovely little series called The Boys of 96, where Mark McAdam attempts, and I'm quoting here, attempts to track down every member of England's Euro 96 squad, which the words track down, I feel quite strange. Idea of him going sort of cook report on Ian Walker saying, tell me about Euro 96. No, I don't want to. Don't close your car door on me, Ian Walker.
Yeah, I'm picturing him kind of bursting through some trees on a golf course to find Steve Stone. Who Steve was Stone in the U96 squad?
He was. Steve Stone was in the U96 squad. He's quite front and centre of the David Seaman getting mobbed after the Spain shootout. Mm. And he's also weirdly prominent in the video, in the Badil and Skinner Three Lions video. It's like Stone, Fowler and one other. It's really bizarre.
If you were Steve Stone, you're going to milk it because you know you're not going to France 98. You've got to be front and center.
Steve Stone as well, in the friendlies, I remember, really excelled. Do you remember England had that kind of run of friendly, including the Higuita scorpion kick? I remember Stone coming in for a few of them and looking really good. There was quite a lot of buzz about Steve Stone around that time.
I'm looking forward to that episode then. Now you've really picked it up. Just Nick, maybe sort of Phil Neville ringing Mark McAdam up and saying, I was in the squad, honestly. I mean, because possibly the most... I mean, I thought Steve Stone was forgettable, but no, Phil Neville being in the squad really blew my mind.
That is crazy, yeah. I also have a big issue with Mark McAdam's question. He says to Sol Campbell, Spice Girls were big in 96. Did anyone have Spice Girls? Now, Spice Girls Wannabe came out after year 96, so there is no way that any of the players would have had Spice Girls. And to quote Fabian Delph, I mean, it's basics.
And they might have gotten a sort of Japanese import or something like that.
Someone had a pirate copy.
They might have had access to the studio, demos or something. You just don't know. You don't know, is what I'm saying. But are broadcasters, Nick, covering themselves in glory so far? I mean, how would you briefly summarise the perennial battle between BBC and ITV?
Well, I mean, it's almost a default that you go for BBC in this country. It's like, if there's a choice of the games being shown...
Not these days.
No.
God, no.
Exactly. The ITV are superb. They've got such just a kind of wide range of people. And although I did sort of express my dissatisfaction with Sky people being on free to air, which doesn't feel right somehow.
I mean, ITV, of course, have the benefit that they're not bringing down Western civilization, so that's probably got their advantage over the BBC. But we'll get on to the Sky loanees in a moment. But I worry about mundane, silly things like the studio design, Charlie. The BBC have cleverly gone for a kind of venue-specific kind of panoramas behind the pundits, nice touch. Usually city squares that you might not recognise, but you have to assume that they are relevant. ITV have simply got London_tower_bridge.mp4 video file just playing on a loop. I don't know if it's live. I'll never find out. How am I supposed to know? Because I'm looking at cloud formations and I'm saying, well, it could be the same day. I don't know. What if it rains? That's the only time I'm ever going to find out. But I do need to know. But I mean, the studios have gone mental. They are massive.
They are really huge. I mean, they're airy, at least. I mean, I was looking when we were watching those Euro 96 ones, I couldn't believe how dark it was. They look, they're in this like sort of cramped room. It really
should just be a box.
It does look strange, but yeah, you're, I mean, they yeah, I do, I think probably that BBC one is slightly better. But I was thinking as well on like the ITV BBC thing. I think we used to be, or a big part of us was programmed to watch BBC because it didn't have ads, and that was obviously a massive advantage. But now I kind of feel people are so used to being able to entertain themselves during ad breaks, both through Sky, but also most people now second screen anyway when they watch football. You're so used to scrolling through your phone on Twitter in ad break, it's less of an issue. And in a way, having like solid build up to get you almost quite like having an ad break, like, ah, okay, well, I can sort of flick on something else, or which is a kind of a reflection of our attention spans. But I think it's just less of an issue. Ads are less of an issue now than they used to be.
And you don't get that aspirational 2 minutes on the BBC where they're offering you £40,000 just by texting in. I mean, you just don't get that. But Nick, let's pick up on their kind of their star signings. I might be speaking out of turn here, but Gary Neville on ITV, I feel like they've got the Neville Light package.
Yeah.
Like they couldn't quite afford the Sky ones. They said, and so he sent them a kind of list of, like a menu of things he'll offer and said, I'll give you your 96 banter, but I'm not doing touchscreen. I'm not doing touchscreen stuff.
There was a slight aside. There was a lovely moment last night where they were doing their standard Euro 96 banter. Eni Aluko said she had the England shirt from there, and Neville tried to, you know, engage in a bit of badinage by saying, "Oh, did you have Neville on the back?" And she just said, "No." it was superb.
Quite right too.
But yeah, I've written a very important piece for The Athletic about the pundits and this, and I wrote exactly that about Gary Neville, that he's not, you know, he hasn't got the giant iPad, he hasn't got Jamie Carragher kind of egging him on. There are no the surroundings are slightly less portentous, where he's not being urged to say, you know, how important absolutely everything is every possible turn. So it does feel like we've got the kind of, you know, the relaxed Neville rather than the kind of attack the day Neville.
It's a bit weird seeing him sort of loosen it all a bit and not talk about every team as if their entire prospects are on the line.
Yeah. And as though he's kind of personally affronted by, you know, the attitude shown by these Burnley players or whoever it is.
He did. I can't remember who it was, but he did describe someone's defence as like a team of 9-year-olds, though. So they do. those moments do kind of just poke.
As Adam said, that's one of the things he will do. He's happy to do that. That's on his list of sort of okay. But yeah, it does almost feel like one of those players who, for their international team, it's just, you know, it's a slightly different setup. We've seen it with so many players over the years, haven't we? That it doesn't quite. It doesn't quite click. I just, on the pundits, I know this is probably an unpopular opinion, but I'm a big Ali McCoy's fan, and I was really looking forward to when I heard him at the start of the game yesterday. I was really looking forward to it, but I actually felt he was a bit negative yesterday, and I almost wonder if it was too big a game in some senses.
Oh, I was about to say, I thought you might say
I don't
that.
Mean too big a game.
I think he was trying too hard.
I think it's almost as if his enthusiasm. Maybe it's that when he's doing Wolves v Southampton or something, and he's absolutely purring about Danny Ings and Stuart Armstrong, and it's genuine because he is really excited by them. I don't know. Then when it's like Mbappe, Benzema, I don't know. It just felt like he felt a bit let down by some of them and by their antics. So yeah, I don't know. It didn't feel like quite the right level for someone who normally is one of my favourite commentators to listen to.
No, fair enough indeed. Further afield on a final point on punditry, we may have to revisit this in a future episode, because in Richard Key's latest blog, Charlie, which I know you follow, where he described as the events in Copenhagen last weekend as the football's 9/11, which I thought was just very Richard Keys. But he talks about Ruud Gullit being his guest in the BN studio, and that made me, and that made you message me to make a mental note that we need to do a pure BN Sports Pundits 11 at some point, because it's a very specific strata of footballer. So we'll definitely talk about that in the coming months, because that's for the real purists.
That will be amazing. I mean Gullit is just so BN, isn't he? Yeah, there is. I mean,
post dreadlocks Gullit.
Absolutely. Know,
dreadlocked Hullet BBC, post dreadlocked Hullet BN Sport. We've covered so much today, so much technical stuff that we've nailed down. I'm glad we covered the fixtures as well, because we never like to see those go overshadowed during a tournament. Well, delighted to entertain you, Nick, and delighted, Charlie, that you made the short trip over the internet to join us today from your in-laws. both on top form. Very pleased that we nailed down all those technical points today. I'm going to leave you with an extended outro today, following on from the last episode of Clichés, where we revealed that David Seaman chuckled 131 times on the first episode of his podcast, Seaman Says. Mikey Anderson wrote in and said, read David Seaman's chuckles. He went to the same school as the actual Chuckle Brothers, Thorpe Hesley Junior School, so a high XCH is to be expected. We were forever being told one or the others would turn up to the Summer Fete. Never happened. I can see Seaman at a Summer Fete. More so than the now, sadly, halved Chuckle Brothers. I, having alluded to it last week about how chuckly Seaman's podcast is, with great affection, I took the liberty of editing his latest podcast down to only the chuckles. So here, everybody, to play us out, is 2 minutes and 20 seconds of David Seaman chuckling on his podcast.
It was interesting.
Before he comes out. They're gonna get over half.
Yeah, I love it. Oh no, I was actually filling a skip up last night. As you do. But
they're drunk when you get them.
Well, come on. Is that what you're calling it?
It's all in my mind.
Got
him. Hand on heart.
But I don't think it's the bad, bad games. I think
you'd be on the phone again.
I know.
I always put my foot in it. Coming,
you look great.
Is that my old ponytail?
Yes.
How you been?
You know what?
I love that. I love that, Chico.
Yeah.
Anyway, everybody, see you next week.
The Athletic.